Welcome back to the TFD Performance Podcast. I'm the main host now, Jack Doherty, and I'm joined by international dietitian to the stars, Jordan Sullivan. Welcome back to the podcast, my friend.
It's good to be back. It's good to be throwing the team on the spot with the intros. It's always the best part of the podcast.
It is. It's good. Keeps us on our toes. But we just want to jump on today just to recap the UFC in New York. I don't know if a lot of you know, Jordan was away for 2 weeks, so the week before fight week and obviously fight week. But the first question I have for you, Jordan, is how epic was that house? Because by your Instagram and all the boys' Instagram from CKB, that looked like some sort of Tony Soprano mansion.
Yeah, it was wild. It was literally like the place out of Scarface. The guy who owned it was this doctor. And I don't want to even guess his ethnicity because that could come across as very bad. But he definitely like took inspiration from like those old gangster movies because it was ridiculous. It was out in New Jersey in a little town called Saddle River. We weren't really allowed to give out the location while we're there just because Israel has some weirdly crazy fans that seem to follow him wherever he goes. But it was about an hour and 20 out of New York. So the fights were in New York City. We were staying in Saddle River in New Jersey, so over the border. But it was this crazy place. Every place around it was just these massive, massive million-dollar mansions on these huge properties. And it's obviously fall over there. And it's just beautiful, eh? Like all these different colors. It was really crazy to see. But this place was ridiculous. Like walked in this huge grand room in the middle with like the big chandelier, and you had the second floor with some bedrooms on it. We had a third floor up the top that had a gym in it, had some more beds up there, had a basement that was just as big as the main area of the house. And then it had an indoor pool in the actual house. It had this huge kitchen as well, a bar. Obviously we weren't drinking, but it had like a bar space, outdoor patio, and then it had its own basketball and tennis court out the back, plus some extra room on the property as well. Like it was just an absolutely ridiculous house.
Yeah, it looked absolutely amazing. There was a lot of people there by the looks of it as well.
Yeah, CKB really went all out with this one. I think by the end of it, we had 30 people in that house. Crazy thing is we were at that one house. So that was the main house in Saddle River. And then 20 minutes away, they had what was called the overflow house, which was another mini mansion where about 15 people were staying as well. So they just got lots of training partners in, but really just anyone who had something to do with the boys' prep, they got flown over kind of as a thank you and just to be there as support. Like everyone was saying during the week, it's the CKB army. That was crazy. I've never really been a part of that. I've never really been that big a fan of it, if I'm being honest. Like in boxing, it's a really big thing to get these big groups and travel around. I've never really been a big fan of that, but this was actually really cool. This was really cool to see everyone in there and just how many people were physically over to support all the boys.
Yeah, it was crazy. But one thing that was different, because usually you fly out, generally for most fight weeks, is like, you know, 7 days out, if not 8 or 10 days out. But this time you went over 2 weeks before, say, the weigh-in day. So what did the pre-fight week kind of look like?
Yeah, pre-fight week is all about getting acclimated to the time zone over there. So obviously there's a couple of things that happen that you need to be aware of and be conscious of at this level, especially when guys like Israel are fighting. So the time difference is the most obvious and biggest one. We're obviously a 14-hour time difference from where we are to where those guys fight. So getting over there and then getting your body in that regular sleep pattern. On top of that, you're getting your body ready to fight at a pretty obscure time of night. So the guys were fighting anywhere from, I think Carlos was on at 6 or 8 p.m., which is kind of not too late. But then Israel wasn't on until 12:30 a.m. So you have to get that sleeping pattern and that familiarity with your daily sessions and your daily schedule to be able to fight at that time. And you can't really just do that coming off your normal schedule from Monday to Friday, whatever it is, and then do a flight for 14, 16, 20 hours, whatever it is, to New York, and then kick into that. You need a bit more than just the 5 days of fight week. So yeah, it was very interesting. Then nutritionally, we're obviously catering for all of that. So we're changing all their meal times to make sure that they're in sync with that new schedule. And so if they're going to be fighting at midnight, then okay, how do we work back from that? And then what's their daily eating pattern going to look like? So when it comes fight day, okay, we've got it all down pat. It's not like, oh, we've just got here on the Tuesday and we've had 3 days to figure out what time we're having meals, what time we're having these snacks. by the time that fight day rolls around, the boys are very, very, very familiar with what their eating schedule is.
Yeah, I think that leads on to the other questions that, you know, I think me, myself and the team got was that the mix up in food you gave the guys during fight week as well. Like obviously there was like chicken wings. I think it was a big talk. I think Ariel Hawani also mentioned like how delicious the food looked, the variety of it. So kind of take us through what your kind of thoughts and your plan was for the boys. Cause obviously there was the four guys we were looking after. Like take me through like what your kind of thought processes was feeding the guys during fight week.
Yeah, nowadays working with the guys, because each of them, like Carlos, Brad, Dan, and Israel, all four of the guys are fine. I've worked with them for years now. So, and we're very, very, very fortunate that we've been able to be consistent with them. So we know how to make weight with the guys, and they're very autonomous with that. To be perfectly honest, they could do it if I was there or if I wasn't. Like I'm really there to just make sure the process goes as perfectly smooth. I'm there because I've got all the data and I know what numbers are meant to be working out, and on this day, what they should be waking up at. They all understand the principles, and that's a factor that happens once you've been around a team for so long, and they educate themselves and they learn it, and that's a really, really positive thing. But within that, if you can get very familiar and get very stuck in just eating the same meals all the time, right? Like you can just eat the same meal and it's just chicken and avocado or chicken and asparagus or whatever, and it'll work. Don't get me wrong, it'll work. But it gets very, very boring. And the thing is, when you go through a fight week, it's a tough thing cutting weight, and it's boring enough as it is. And you've got to water load, and you've got to do media, and you've got to do everything else. So food is such a great opportunity to make the whole experience way more better, like way more positive. You can use food as a positive influence to improve the guys' moods, to improve the guys' energy levels, to improve how they're getting through that fight week. And that was really what the theme was with this one is, we worked alongside Chef Mario, who we spoke to in the last podcast, and we designed this menu in this fight week recipe set where, okay, what are all the guys' favorite foods? I know when they're not in camp, they love eating these foods. They love doing all this. How do we take those foods and how do we make, you know, pizzas or burgers or chicken wings or chicken drumsticks? How do we make curries? How do we make fried chicken? How do we do all these foods that are really, really enjoyable, but make them abide to all the rules that we need when we're cutting weight? And then how do we adjust those numbers for Israel? How do we adjust them for Carlos? How do we adjust them for Hooker? How do we do all of this? And that was really the theme, is like, we want to be able to make this a way more memorable experience. I think we're well past the point of just making weight. We know we can make weight. We've done it for years. We've banged on that. We've never missed. We've always been bang on with that. Now it's really the goal. How do we make this the most enjoyable experience for the guys once we're in that fight week?
Yeah, I think that's what we found out. We're finding more and more. The more you work with someone, the more data you can collect, the more free you can be. I think, like, you know, obviously the first few times working with someone, you kind of have to have some more boundaries. But I think the point you are with the CKB guys, you know them so well. And like you said, like, you know, changing it up or giving them food that they enjoy just gives that kind of positive spin and obviously that positive background in terms of their fight week, knowing that they can come back from media or they can come back from a workout and have delicious food that also, you know, is working towards their goal of, you know, obviously manipulating the water weight. But one thing that I saw you doing, which is usually that I'm there to help you in terms of juggling multiple weight cuts. If not many people know that obviously, you know, doing multiple weight cuts is something that we've done individually a lot in our careers, but it is very stressful. And this time, unfortunately, I wasn't able to make it over, but you had to go juggling four weight cuts on the night before weigh-in, obviously weigh-in day.
Yeah, it's tough, right? Like that's the best thing about having a team, right? Is like you can have extra people like you, me, who've done this together for years and years, and having Dojo or Loz or someone there, or even better when all of us together, because it's just such a smooth operation. And the thing is, when you're cutting weight, it's a very, very high pressure situation. And especially when they're moving a bit of weight, there's a lot of steps that you absolutely have to nail to make it as least stressful as possible for that athlete. And what I've found over the years is the more further removed you go from that and the less control you have over those steps, the higher chance that something's going to go wrong or that process isn't going to be as smooth. So it's always just balancing act. Like, yeah, I had four guys. Like, you've got four guys that you're trying to juggle with who are all cutting weight at the same time, different amounts, and you're trying to figure out different steps of that process while managing the athlete that you're directly in front of. So the way that we work it with the guys, it's a bit tough, right? Like, thankfully, we've got guys like Frank Hickman and Andre Poirier, who have also been with me, you know, the wrestling coaches. They've cut weight themselves hundreds of times and they've seen us, they've seen you and me work together, so they can hand, you know, give us a helping hand quite a lot when we're doing that process. But it is tough, right? Like, the hardest thing that people don't appreciate with it is like, it's not as simple as just jumping in a bath or jumping in a sauna and just sweating for random amounts of time and then jumping out and drying off and checking your weight. That's not how it works. Is you collect data on these guys, and everyone has an individual sweat rate. Everyone has a certain time that they begin sweating at. When you wipe their forehead, you're looking for that reappearance of sweat, and everyone has a unique amount of time. And the time that that sweat reappears on that forehead tells you a story of how hydrated they are and how well they're sweating. That story is also unique to that individual person. And when you've worked with that person enough, you can understand how the story is going, if it's going good, if it's going bad, by what those numbers are saying. So there's a lot that's going through your mind when you're doing this process with someone. It's not like we're just patting their head and going, hey, keep going, pal, like it's all good. You're working these numbers out. You're going, okay, I know their sweat rate is right now, we're at 1 liter per hour. And I know that we've done this many rounds, so their sweat rate is going to decrease to this amount. And that'll probably show up in a sweat rate time between, you know, 45 and 60 seconds. Okay, I just hit 47 seconds. That means I probably have to spend an extra 10 minutes in this round to get the same amount of weight loss as last time. So I'm going to manage that. Okay, what time are we at now? Okay, I've got this person sitting in front of me. Okay, they're starting to struggle a bit, or their mind's lapsing. Okay, what are the things I can check? Let me check their vital signs. Are their vital signs good? Yes, heart rate's good. Pulse oximeter's good. What can I manage then to keep them mentally good? Okay, let's do some breathing. Okay, what music do we need to play? Do you want the lights out? Do you need people away from you? Do you need me to say something to you? All of these things are going through your head, and that's just for one person. And then you're trying to manage that for four people in total. So you've got all these things going through your head. And then you're like, okay, I've got this person going from this amount of time, and then I've got to go over here in this amount of time, and then this amount of time, this amount. So you're bouncing between everyone. And then on top of that is all the other stuff, the psychological stuff. This person likes listening to chilled out music. This person really likes the heavy metal stuff. This person really likes reggae. So it's like you're trying to balance all of these different factors and cater as best as you can to the individual person. And it can get tricky. And I think that's the most stressful part. Like, we know that we're going to make weight, but it's, you know, it's not really our job just to get them on weight. You want to do it in the way that's as least stressful as possible. And when you're juggling that many people, it can get really, really tough.
Yeah, I think we should do a separate podcast just on that, to be honest, because I think that, like, so many people comment about how exhausted we look at like weigh-ins and stuff like that. And like, I think that's such a good description of what it is. Like, it's not like, yeah, like a lot of people think it's just chuck them in a bath, chuck them in a sauna, chuck them in a wrap, and then get their sweat off. But as you said, it's such an individual thing. Like, one person, again, may want something completely different to the other. So, like, yeah, again, doing one weight cut can be stressful, just to make sure that person, you know, as you said, we're not trying to make them just make weight. You're trying to, like, you know, read them so well that they're coming to that scales as least depleted or least stressed as possible. So you're trying to ensure that they're, you know, as you said, timing the bath. Okay, maybe we need to take them out of the bath now and put them in the wrap for a bit longer, that kind of individualization. But on the scale of what you did over four people, and especially we should, you know, I need to note the fact that you're working with people like Israel, who's getting paid a lot of money, I would assume, and that, you know, the pressure that if it did go wrong, not that it has ever or it will not happen, because you've got those numbers there, but the pressure around that, I think that's what's something that you probably don't even realize because you've been part of it for so long, but the pressure around these top end guys, there's no room for error, because there's no like, oh, you know, he missed weight, then, you know, that guy will take the fight. There's $1 million on the line. So yeah, as you said, juggling four people, four different personalities, four big personalities, because I've met all the guys that are fantastic, but very different in the way that they kind of are personality-wise. So it could be very stressful. But I think that leads on to our next part of what we're going to talk about, which was the results. What do you think about how the night...
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Like, I've spoken to a couple people on the way back about this, and I mean, you're always going to have the critics. Like, we'll start with Israel, because I think that's the one everyone wants to hear us talk about. And I mean, first and foremost, I don't think you can ever criticize someone too hard for doing what these guys do, right? Like, it's easy for us. You know, I'm pretty heavily involved with it, and I even feel like, yeah, you really don't have that much place to criticize. I'll never criticize another athlete who steps in there and puts their body online, especially, like, you need to remember, this is for our entertainment. But you know, wins and losses are just part of the sport. I think Israel had a great fight. Like, he had a great fight. Everything that week went well. This is why I love working with Israel, is because he's very regimented and he knows his body very well. Like, and everything went really, 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 really well up to that point. And that's the beautiful thing about fighting. That's why I love the sport so much. You get there, he was at his absolute best, you know, Pereira was at his absolute best. And really at that level, I've said it before, it's just a game of who can execute the game plan better. And on that night, Alex Pereira invested in those calf kicks, compromised Israel's footwork. And like Israel, you know, he did really well. I kudos to him. He was up on the scorecards. I thought he did phenomenal to adjust to that. And I'm glad we got to see some of his grappling because he is a good grappler in MMA, you know, and I'm glad we got to see that. But Pereira had a great game plan and he executed it. And on that day, he just executed a bit better. Like, obviously, you're disappointed. You never want to see your clients lose, but I think that's one of the best parts of MMA, right? Like, you get to see these high-level chess matches just play out. And I enjoyed watching the fight. I really enjoyed it. I hope they play it back. And that's, like, obviously, there's a big part of me that says, yeah, I want Israel to get his belt back. But I enjoyed watching that chess match. Like, that was a fight that I was like, wow, this is super entertaining. Knowing what Israel's game plan was as well, and then seeing how Pereira was countering and then how Israel was adjusting, I thought it was such a great fight to watch, knowing that it was just this big game of chess that they were playing.
Yeah, I think, like, also obviously we're huge fans of Izzy because he's part of the team and we've talked to him personally, but I think just the way that he handled it as well was amazing. A lot of people would have handled that a lot differently for that kind of defeat. But as you said, like, I think people love to see champions lose and they love to criticize. But again, like, it's not like he got starched in the first 3 minutes. He fought a fantastic fight and he stopped Pereira in the first or second round. Then at the fifth round, he got caught. And like, just like Usman, they got caught. And that's what happens. That's part of the game. That's what, you know, that's what happens in this sport. But that's what, again, that's why we love it. Cause it's like, you know, you never know what's going to happen on the night. But I think, yeah. Then also we've got what happened is, as of release today, Brad retired or has taken a step away from the sport.
Yeah, I don't think he's officially retired, but he said he's definitely taking off a little bit of time, which, you know, I think me and Brad are quite good friends, right? So I think probably knew this was somewhere on the horizon after that last fight in July. But like, again, Brad's just one of those guys that it just shows how crazy competitive the UFC is, right? Like, Brad is one of the best fighters in the world. Like, no one can question that. He is one of the best lightweight fighters in the world. And if you look at his run in his first four fights, like, he had a murderous row of fighters going through that first four fight. And the thing with Brad is that, again, he did everything right. When we first started in the UFC, we had to completely change his body. I spoke about it on the Fight Science podcast before, where we had to restore Brad's metabolism. And that took a long time. That took up to a year. We had to change his body composition. We had to change his frame to go from being a 75 kilo MMA fighter or kickboxer to being a 70.7 MMA fighter, which is a completely different type of body. And he went through that. He went through that and he studied it and he understood it and he knew what was going on with his body and he took every aspect of his training so seriously and he nailed it. He did the integrated training, he did the breath work, he did the recovery, he did the strength conditioning, he did the nutrition, changed his body, did everything. And then just seeing at this level how close those fights are, it just makes you appreciate, man, this competition is stacked. And I think from a performance point of view, from what we do, right, it's so important for athletes to hear this side of it. Is like, you've got someone like Brad Riddell who's doing everything right, like doing everything right just to compete with these top level guys. And that's why it kind of breaks my heart when I see young fighters, right, and they're, don't get me wrong, like, I appreciate sometimes it's a financial thing and you can't do it. Absolutely. I appreciate that. But do what you can to invest in those other areas because you'll regret it if you don't do it. Like, natural skill and talent will get you so far as an amateur and even early in your professional career. But at some point, you're going to get to a point where everyone is good. And that could be the difference between you breaking through and keep going. And, you know, Brad's such a great example of it. Like, he did everything right. And like, look how fierce that competitive is. Like, it's just crazy game, right? Like, it's a crazy game. Any one of those last three fights for Brad, like, you could have different night, different fight, Brad could be victorious in all of those fights. It's just at that level, you've got to be so switched on with everything because it's so competitive.
Yeah, 100% agree. You know, obviously, you know, there was the highs and lows of that night. Obviously, two out of the Dan won and Carlos won as well. So there's obviously positives to that whole thing. But So what's next on the cards for yourself? Is there any more traveling? What are you doing now?
Not in terms of MMA, we don't have much on, not big things until we got Volk going into UFC Perth. That just got announced, I think, day of the fights, I want to say, officially got announced. We've obviously known about it for a while. Volk versus Makhachev for the lightweight title. Again, I can't wait to document that. And I know Volk's been quite vocal about what we're doing to get ready for that. Me and Chris Jaffrey, or Jaff as he's known by strength conditioning coach, we have a pretty cool plan set out for Volk. I think we learned a bit when Israel went up and fought Jan. Obviously, I think there's a misconception when people are like, oh, you got to put on size and you've got to do this and you've got to get bigger if you're going up a weight class. And I think John Jones is a great example of how you go up a weight class. Like, he's been out of the sport for years with the intention of going up a weight class because there is a way you have to do it. It's not something you do over weeks and months. Like, as much as like bodybuilders will try to tell you that's possible and you can do that, you can't make significant changes to your frame that are meaningful and last while, and they, you know, I don't like the term functional strength, but, you know, translate to functional strength in just weeks or months. It's just not possible. It's something you do over long periods of time. And like, you just don't have that for something like this. So we do have a game plan set where we do want Alex to put on size, and we want him to put on, again, I don't like the term, but functional strength, for lack of a better term. We want him to put on functional strength and then stay heavier going into that fight. Just really excited because Volk is just one of those athletes that's just getting better and better and better and better in his career. And I think, man, we do that when the guy's in a deficit in camp and he's losing weight in camp. And now if this plan we've got, if we pull this off before his camp and then we start camp at this level and he can go well-fueled all the way through, I don't know, man. Like, it's such a crazy thing to think what level Volk could go to. I feel like if Volk, when he won the title, just turned Super Saiyan 1 when he beat Max, and then maybe he turned Super Saiyan 2 on that last fight that he had, I feel like this is what he needs to do to go Super Saiyan 3.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people when they fight Makhachev come in with like they're acting confident, but they're actually slightly terrified of him. But I like listening to all Volk's interviews, like it's like you can tell his mindset is like he fully believes in himself and his capacity and ability to like to win this title, which is like, which is amazing to hear, because obviously a lot of people, you know, a lot of people are scared of Makhachev, but he's got that fucking iron mind of him that he has, and I think that he definitely is possible. But I think that's a conversation for another podcast in terms of our plans for the UFC Perth, which I think will be great for the MMA community in Australia, but obviously we'll be out there showcasing, you know, our work and helping a lot of the fighters on that day. But I know we wanted to keep it nice and short and sharp, this one. Do you have any final words?
Yeah, no, I think that pretty much covers it. I think it was really, really cool week. It was super, super fun. I think UFC Perth, I'm super excited for. We got some really, really cool things planned for that. Yeah, I think we'll wrap it up there. But if you guys have any questions, I know we posted a lot of fight week content. Actually, I did a Q&A just recently and I totally screwed up my timing because I was in flight with no reception and my Q&A just ran out. So I'm going to get to that. But I got a lot of fight week questions. So if there are questions you guys have, just shoot us and we'll cover it on the podcast. There's only so many words you can write on Instagram and so many things we can do there. But Jack and I can go over it in way more depth when we do it on a podcast. So feel free to hit us up on socials or email us as you guys do. You guys know where to do that. And we'll chat to you next time.
And there it is, another episode of the TFD Performance Podcast. If you like this episode and you enjoy our content, then you'll absolutely love our new TFD Performance Hub. Our first course on the Hub is the Performance Nutrition for BJJ course, which is perfect for grapplers looking to master their nutrition. And if you follow the link in the description, you can even snag 40% off that course. This podcast will be available through the podcast app, iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and if you follow along our socials at @the_fightdietitian, you can see all of the best bits from our podcast episodes. Thanks for listening in, and I'll see you guys for the next episode of the TFD Performance Podcast.